Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts. This is podcast 661, Re-engagement. Re-engaging with the world after a long summer of travel and fun. And we're going to gonzo talk our first re-engagement podcast in podcast 661. What did I tell you right before the state fair? And in the last podcast, I said, boy, when the weather changes, it happens every year at the end of the state fair in Minnesota, and it did. And it's already getting cold, and I'm thinking about turning the heat on. And it's only going to get colder, and of course, when you want to turn the heat on, and it's going to be soon if it isn't already happened, you want to make sure that those systems are working, and that's why I talk about Ryan Plumbing and Heating, because when it comes to keeping your heating running right, your AC, your plumbing, and so forth, whether it's home or business, when you have plumbing or heating problems, you want reliable service, and that's Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. This is the number you call, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis. You call 612-927-6488 online at ryanplumbing.com. What do? They do quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. You want it fixed right. They do residential and business. And call them now and have them come over and check your heating system. And I always mention this. If you have older parents who do not do that sort of thing anymore, maybe you're dad used to be diligent about making sure the filters are changed and all that stuff, and he has passed on, and it's just your mom, and she doesn't do that stuff, or whether they're just, you know, old and they don't do that stuff anymore, you could call Ryan Plumbing and Heating and have them check your parents' heating system if you have old parents, or if you're like me, if you're just stupid and you don't check that stuff, good idea to have them come over and check it out. Once again, in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Online at ryanplumbing.com. Now, I do have a message for people starting businesses, people in business for themselves. In fact, I was talking about ReliaFund with Greg Ryan at Ryan Plumbing and Heating just the other day. This is a new company I'm working with. I'm pretty excited about them. If you have a business and you do business through your website, listen up, because this is a company that's a payment processor. They've been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. The best way for me to explain it is, a lot of times people say, you can pay me through your website, but I don't take checks. They take all kinds of payments. They can clear checks, and they can make sure people can pay you through your website, and it's a real boon to your business. Also, if you're a software developer and you're developing any kind of e-commerce sites or developing websites for businesses, think ReliaFund. It's ReliaFund at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A, ReliaFund.com. There's a banner at the top of the page at the Bob Davis Podcast, which takes you to ReliaFund. Here's the deal. They deal with developers and people doing business personally. You're not going to get an email back, and you're not going to have to work through a contact page other than the first contact. You actually will speak to a human being. No long-term contracts, secure, technology-focused. Greg or Kevin at ReliaFund.com, 866-243-5040, or check them out online. You can click on that banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is one of those days when I have a lot to do, and I just realized I've got to put up a podcast. It is the Tuesday after Labor Day in podcast time, which, if I was a kid, this would be back to school, as I said in one of the back to school podcasts I did just recently. September 6th, it's back to school, and sitting in those hard desks with your new shoes and your concrete jeans and your brand new notebooks and pencils and, you know, everything else that you had, that's what this kind of feels like for me, even though I've been traveling and working all summer at other stuff. Now there's a ton of stuff to do, and I just realized, yeah, I've got stuff that I have to do tonight, so a rare daytime podcast, sitting down to re-engage. And it's a weird feeling right now. Maybe I'm the only one that has it. Maybe it's just in my world. But it's kind of a weird feeling. The weather has changed in my neck of the woods, Minnesota, where it actually really feels like fall right now. We have sunspots coming in. We have the aftermath of one hurricane, and we have another hurricane approaching. So we had Hurricane Harvey, and then we have, of course, Hurricane Irma. I think you know the name. As it approaches, and Hurricane Irma is already the largest storm, quote unquote, ever recorded in the Atlantic, and it is on track to at least hit the Caribbean. We'll see where it goes after that. But this is going to be a news-rich environment because you also have the president beginning the process of phasing out DACA. That's controversial. And you have a really crowded agenda for Congress coming up with the tax reform effort and other issues. And you yet have still this foreign policy issue of North Korea. So there's a lot to talk about. And as always, when I re-engage, my problem is, well, how do you really advance a story? So much media today doesn't advance anything. So much media today doesn't provide you with any new information that you need to think about what's going on. And as I go through and look at everything and try to find articles that talk about what's going on and getting the details, so much of it, and I don't know how many times I have to say this or how many times I will say this, because it's a much more powerful feature of media today than it was in the past. But it's this need to defend or to attack the president. It was certainly there during the Obama administration, but now with the Trump administration, with so much polarization, and I'm not even sure what the polarization, what side the polarization is on anymore. So much of what you read is an effort to support a particular position taken by the administration or to attack it. So we'll start with DACA, which is the program that allows children of non-citizens to stay in the country. And, the idea that this should be ended and what has happened is the president has issued a couple of executive orders now that will phase out DACA. And Jeff Sessions, not the president, Jeff Sessions went out and stated the administration position on Tuesday morning that has begun this phase-out process. And the president's position is this is something that we're a nation of laws, and this is something that Congress needs to act on. So on top of tax reform, you now have immigration reform. The defense of that is it's a nation of laws, and this is something that should never have been done in the first place through the executive branch. And as you recall, I think President Obama did it because Congress wouldn't act on his raft of immigration reform ideas. Certain people on both sides of the political spectrum believe that we should have open borders. We should have open borders, that there shouldn't be really any immigration laws. Anybody ought to be able to come in. Others don't feel that way, so it's kind of an interesting thing. I just got a thing today, some email today from Our Revolution people, the Bernie Sanders group, and they don't seem to believe that there should be any borders. And I know that certain libertarian groups feel that immigration law in itself doesn't work with a libertarian philosophy. And I don't know how people feel about this. I have a tendency to think, well, we should all do our own homework and make our own decisions. I have a tendency to agree that this is kind of all in lieu of congressional action, because what's begun to happen in this country is Congress gets deadlocked or they do things that aren't good, and the executive branch ends up having to, quote unquote, fix it. Depending on which party is in power, they have to issue orders to, quote unquote, fix it. I will tell you that it has been said, and I think it's not an entirely unwise comment, that what he should have done instead of ending DACA was he should have an immigration proposal of his own that Congress can act on as a package of legislation that can be campaigned for and acted on. And then once that is in place, remove DACA. There are people who say that really this is a harmless program that some 800,000 people have applied for. But pretty much effective immediately, the program is no longer available. So now you're going to hear all the voices on both sides of the fence screaming and yelling and pounding and actually finding out what the program is and how it works and what it is and what's actually being done through executive order is going to be really difficult. I don't like the idea that the presidency is Santa Claus, and that's kind of a theme in this podcast. I don't like the idea that the president dispenses aid and the president decides whether you remain or in the country or have to leave. I don't like the idea that the president decides through executive orders all of the wonderful things that that provide and bestow upon people come from this high office of the presidency. These are things that really need to be dealt with through law and in accordance with the U.S. Constitution, not through some fiat, literally, not through some executive order by a president. And I think we are seeing a continued abuse of the executive order process. You know, people don't seem to mind when it's in their favor, but when it goes against them, then they get upset about it. And what's happened is that sometimes the president is quote unquote forced to act or feels that he is forced to act and uses and really abuses the power of executive order. And that's all I'm going to say about that, because the discussions of DACA and its efficacy, you know, end up falling into a partisan, you know, you're right, you're wrong argument that people have preconceived ideas about these things. You know, certainly not all executive orders are bad. I just think this is one that the Congress has failed to address the immigration issue. And what he's doing is kicking this back to them with no real legislative acumen of his own. So he's essentially saying, I'm going to phase this out. Congress needs to act before it is phased out, which seems reasonable. But on the other hand, he doesn't really have a legislative outreach that can craft a package so that it's passed and then the program can be phased out. That's my criticism, and that's been my criticism of this president since the beginning, is that he doesn't and it's this idea that we need a businessman to run the country, and we need to run the country like a business, and we need a CEO. Well, a presidency is not a CEO. It's a political office. This is not over, and this problem is not over, and it won't be over until there is an immigration package that Congress can vote on and that he can sign. So another sort of PR effort, perhaps, by this president, that even that statement will be criticized because, of course, people think he needs to do A, B, or C. He needs to act, and this needs to get done. So that brings me to my next thought, which is the hurricane issue. And I don't want to seem insensitive, especially when one hurricane has done its damage and another one is approaching and could do even more damage. But since when is the federal government Santa Claus? This has been my impression from, you know, watching some of the coverage and reading coverage about this whole thing, that I'm getting so tired of these disasters either being a platform for politicians to show up with their jackets and their hats and, you know, showing everybody how caring they are, you know, a la Chris Christie and President Obama and everyone. Since the whole Katrina thing, the president has to go and the president has to bring packages of aid and he has to bring bags of gifts for people. Certainly people in need need to be, I guess, helped, but my thought from this whole thing was, well, to what level is the state of Texas responsible for its citizens, and to what level potentially is the state of Florida responsible? The only place where the federal government is responsible directly would be federal territories like the District of Columbia, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam, and Puerto Rico. Those are actual territories where the federal government may be a little bit more involved than the territorial, literally the territorial government. So, and I don't think anyone's talking about that, and I don't think anybody has asked the question, what are the federal responsibilities? And what are the federal responsibilities of a federal government that's $20 trillion in debt? How long can we continue to provide education and provide Social Security and health insurance and everything else? And then every time there's some disaster somewhere, we're going to step in and we're going to rebuild everything. You know, my understanding is there's a lot of people in Texas that built on floodplains without any kind of flood insurance or hurricane insurance, and you're living in a hurricane zone. So if you don't have that kind of insurance, then who's responsible to rebuild that person's house? And how many times do you rebuild somebody's house because they lived somewhere where there was a potential for a river to flood or a potential for a hurricane? How responsible is the federal government to states? And I'm not talking about individuals. I'm talking about states for hurricane relief. You know, every state has a National Guard. Every state has resources. And then there are national organizations, relief organizations such as Red Cross. How responsible is the federal government to these things when we are so far in debt? Nobody in this country seems to realize how much money is being spent by the federal government, and that is going to bring me to the next thing, aside from this whole discussion of when Irma hits, now we're going to have the same problem in Florida. And the question has to be asked, what's the level of responsibility for the federal government? A little cooler these days, and definitely back to school weather, but we're going to be in the mid-70s later this week, which is great. It's prime riding weather if you ride motorcycles. And this might be the time of the year that you're thinking, boy, I've been riding all summer, and I really wish I had this accessory. I wish I had a mount for my GoPro. I wish I had better foot pegs on this thing. I think I want to get new pipes because the ones I have aren't loud enough or cool enough or badass enough. And I really think a different lighting option would be cool. I want you to think about Ciro 3D, Ciro3D.com. This is the great motorcycle products and accessories company that I'm working with. They do great lighting options. They do great solutions for all kinds of things. They are featuring now these fantastic air cleaner covers that just make your bike look great. But they're really practical as well. And they concentrate on quality and design. So click on the banner at the top of the page, the Bob Davis Podcast.com, Ciro3D, Ciro3D.com. Get their catalog. I've got it right here. This catalog is amazing because you can actually see how the parts work, what they look like. It's lifelike. You can see that on the website as well. Ciro3D, if you ride, Ciro3D.com. They are riders. They love motorcycles. It's part of their life. It's part of what they do, and it's all of what they do at Ciro3D, Ciro3D.com. I couldn't, almost forgot the .com there. So I may seem cold. Well, how dare you? You know, there's people there that are hurting. Well, there are, and I'm not denying that. And I'm certainly a human being, and I see people who are in difficulty. But I'm asking the question I think that needs to be asked, which is, in terms of advancing this, is what is the level of the responsibility of the federal government? Have you thought about that? Have you thought about the level of responsibility legally that the federal government has in these instances? I don't think we have. We just send cameras down to see people in distress, and people sit and they watch it, and they see it on YouTube, and they see it in social media, and they're feeling this. And something needs to be done, but what and who's responsible to fix it? And what's the level of the responsibility of the individual in any of these cases? So there's that. I talked to a friend in Austin the other day, and before the hurricane, people went out and filled up any container they had full of gasoline. And this is how silly people are. And they now have a problem in Austin of all of these people. First of all, they have literally a gasoline shortage. The gas stations don't have any gas because people bought it all up before the hurricane. And now you have this problem of people with pails of highly volatile gasoline in their garages and in their backyards and everything else. So it's just a situation that, you know, if there's so many questions that come up partially, and I'm not really, you know, I haven't really thought this through, but, you know, how responsible are we these days to take care of ourselves, and how much do we think through these potential kinds of disasters before they happen, and so we aren't forced to run out and fill up pails with gasoline and things of that nature. Maybe that's the right thing to do. Maybe that's what they told people to do. I don't know. The other thing is the hurricane situation coming, as I said, with potential disaster in Florida. And so then that's going to be a story. So we're back in this huge news-rich environment. And then finally, the black swan. Let's just say the black swan, which is the event that nobody can see coming. But yet in the aftermath, people say, oh, yeah, that was so obvious that we could, you know, it's supposed to be the event that's unpredictable. And this brings me to North Korea, which is continuing to be an ongoing problem that, you know, I posted that North Korea podcast, and I did because that podcast remains current in terms of laying the groundwork for whatever is to come, whether there's some kind of negotiated settlement or whether there is actually, a military exchange of some kind between either North Korea and South Korea, North Korea and Japan, North Korea and the United States, and then the potential for what would happen if China decided preemptively that they needed to move troops into North Korea, because the humanitarian crisis, if something were to happen on the peninsula, would be significant both for the South and the North and for China and for Japan. So this is another problem, and the approach of the White House is to be a little bit more forceful in the rhetoric. The problem with forceful rhetoric, or as they call it, saber rattling, and I don't know if you can call what is being said by the United States saber rattling, but okay, let's just call it saber rattling or bellicose, a little bit higher level of bellicosity vis-a-vis North Korea, is if they don't respond to it, then how do you deal with it? You know, everybody's saying, well, you know, one thing that Trump is doing is he's finally speaking to the North Koreans in their own language. And the idea is that they're convinced that they need to stop testing, or they need to do this, that, or the other thing. Well, that doesn't seem to have any effect. They announced over the weekend that it appears that they have a hydrogen bomb, which is considerably more powerful than just an atomic bomb. So this one that they demonstrated, or supposedly was demonstrated, is probably 10 times the power of the Hiroshima bomb, enough to do a lot of damage, certainly enough to produce an EMP if they have a missile capable enough to reaching high enough over a populated area that the EMP theory could at last be tested in practice. And you might want to look that up. This is the idea that a nuclear blast is accompanied by an electromagnetic pulse, which can destroy electronics that aren't shielded. You know, your automobile is not shielded. Chips are not shielded in most consumer devices. So everything in our society would be that wasn't shielded, which is just about everything, would be completely destroyed. So if you for example, well, it wouldn't matter. I was going to say put your cell phones inside your microwave oven But it wouldn't matter because an EMP blast, if the theory is correct, would wipe out all of the cell phone towers. So it would cause enormous damage and would be a black swan event on a very high scale, this potential to use an EMP blast, which wouldn't include any radiation. It's a high altitude blast of a hydrogen weapon that then fires this EMP down and basically disables everything electronic within a certain radius. That is a potential that they have if they have a missile that can reach the continental United States. So there's that. And the idea is that if we talk a little louder and we say more scary things and we make movements to threaten more, that it will provoke a solution of some kind. And, you know, that's an interesting question. It might. I don't want to be one of the people that immediately says, oh, Donald Trump is making a huge mistake if he thinks this, that, or the other thing. Clearly, negotiation did not stop the North Korean nuclear program. And clearly, efforts to negotiate behind the scenes, or at least quietly over the last few years, both Bush and Clinton and Obama haven't really produced any responses. So the kind of response we wanted, which is not to see the development of nuclear weapons, certainly not thermonuclear weapons, and certainly not the missile capabilities, which no one thought the North Koreans possess the technology to create the missile technology that they have. Are they getting it from somewhere? Are they doing it themselves? Well, those are good questions. Are they getting it from the Iranians? Are they getting it from the Chinese? What's the play here? And I think that's the greater question that I have. Is there a behind-the-scenes Chinese play here? Are the Chinese genuinely concerned about this? Or is this a situation that's kind of out of control? A lot of people worried about North Korea. Let me tell you, and this is why I posted the North Korean podcast where I laid it all out, any conflict on the North Korean peninsula has to be over quickly. And that proves to be very difficult given the capabilities of the North Koreans just in terms of artillery. Now, they don't even know if I think it's the largest number of tubes, basically artillery weapons in the world, are concentrated on the demilitarized zone along the 38th parallel, which are aimed directly into Seoul, in which almost half of the South Korean population lives. So now, those weapons have not been used in years. We don't know if they would work. But if you look at the nuclear program and you think, well, we didn't think they could do that, maybe those weapons are active. So the first thing supposedly that would happen in any kind of conflict is they would start firing shells into Seoul. Or they would have a nuclear weapon that they could use against Seoul or whatever. Now, if they use a nuclear weapon, any kind of nuclear weapon, there's going to be radiation that is going to affect the North and the South and Japan and China. So this is a sticky issue and a dangerous issue for all of those countries. We can only hope that this isn't some kind of gambit by the Chinese and that they're just as interested as we are in solving this problem. But this is something that I'm watching really closely, and I don't want to say this is what we should do. This is what we should. We should send troops there. We should strike them. I mean, I thought 20 years ago that striking the North Korean capabilities in terms of nuclear weapons and finding some way to strike or disable that program would have been the right approach. The Clinton administration, then the Bush administration, then the Obama administration chose to negotiate, leaving this administration with a poor choice of either using some sort of military capability to take action and risking a major war, or basically negotiating away the fact that the North Koreans now have this nuclear capability. I will say, for people that are interested, there are theories that suggest that countries that have nuclear capabilities are more likely to be peaceful and more likely to progress their systems to some sort of market system just because they're now a member of a special club. I don't know if that's true, but I wanted to throw that out there. And then finally, I just have one more thing, because as you know, I'm constantly on the Doom watch. And if you're not watching YouTube, then you don't know this. But now that the eclipse is over, everyone is talking about September 23rd, 2017. So I might have to figure out something special to do on September 23rd, 2017, because that is the day that apparently the tribulation will begin, or the day that it's a planetary alignment, which is visible from Earth. Now, I'm just going to say this because these alignments makes it sound like the planets stop and line up in their rotations. No, they do not. This is something that appears from our vantage on Earth to be an alignment. So there are alignments, there are configurations of the stars, astronomically speaking, and therefore astrologically speaking. So every one of these crazy people, whether they're astrologers, tarot card readers, religious people, everyone is using this as a platform to make the next big prediction. So we just have to wait and see. Although I have to say, between the hurricanes, the sunspots, the North Koreans, the market being unusually high, and on and on and on, you never know. Now, in addition to all the things Congress is going to have to do, and I didn't get too much of a chance to talk about tax reform, but I just want to say very quickly, you know, the tax reform thing is interesting because they're going to have to raise taxes in various spots in order to get the money up, given the budget of the United States government to pay for. And I hate to say that because that's really a misnomer, to quote unquote pay for or make budget neutral tax reform. And I will be talking more about that in future podcasts. But you might see some taxes that will appear for companies that are doing business outside the United States. This is all part of trade protection. It's certainly a major issue in the U.S. these days. If you work for a company that manufactures overseas and you are preparing to bring some of your stuff back to the United States, if your company is considering American manufacturing, please remember DepoStar, American Design, Engineering, and Manufacturing. Visit their website at DepoStar.com. That's DepoStar, DepoStar.com, or click on the banner at the top of the Bob Davis Podcasts page. Let's not forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business for heating checks, because when it comes to keeping all of your systems up and running, you got to have somebody who really knows what they're doing, and that is what Ryan is all about. For a heating check, call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, or online at ryanplumbing.com. Thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Apple iTunes is the granddaddy of all podcast distribution. I love iTunes because they don't insert ads, so you can hear the whole podcast without the inserted ads that you hear on Stitcher.com or BlogTalkRadio.com or Tuned In, which can be problematic for Android devices. The reason that we syndicate to these sites is because of Android devices. You can also listen to the Bob Davis Podcast right off the page through the streaming, or you can download the podcast and listen to it that way. And I appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all of the social medias. I sound like a 100-year-old man. And all them social medias on the interwebs. Thanks for your donations also at thebobdavispodcast.com. For mobile podcast, come in. I'll tell you more about that going forward. Maybe I'll have to go someplace on the 23rd. I don't know. I'm so tired of traveling for the time being that I'm pretty much just doing business and hanging out here at home doing podcasts. Thanks for listening to Podcast 661, the Bob Davis Podcasts, Gonzo Talk, back to school, back to re-engagement in the things going on in the world. Be safe if you're down in Florida.
Autumn in New York, why does it seem so inviting? Autumn in New York, that spells the thrill of first nighting. Glittering crowds and shimmering clouds and canyons of steel. They're making me feel